of H.R. Giger's alien monsters. The intergalactic gothic super beasts that look like a combination of male and female genitalia who will ruin your day if they don't impregnate you first. In the latest chapter of the Aliens franchise, Alien Covenant, we get to the planet of the hunky space jockeys where the evil robot David, played by Michael Fassbender, who, like a demonic Leonardo da Vinci, has been cooking up trouble with the funky black tar to create monsters.
Ultimately, the movie derails into a hodgepodge of callbacks to other Alien films, which, like Charlize Theron doing her best Wile E. Coyote impression, trying to outrun the rolling spaceship in Prometheus, falls flat under its own weight. Today, we take a look at the new Alien Covenant film, our favorite things from past Alien movies, why we're all secretly rooting for the monster, and why the movie and book titles sound like gay Broadway plays.
Plus, students in Canada apologize for playing Lou Reed's Take a Walk on the Wild Side at an event where they were passing out bus passes.
Vivacious whips her fan with Katy Perry on Saturday Night Live.
Dong energy!
A look at the new Star Trek Discovery.
Oh no, she better didgeridoo don't!
And a Colorado man is accused of snipping off someone's nuts in a botched surgery.
I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
And this is Feast of Fun. Mark, you sound like Lauren Bacall.
Itchy and scratchy and matchy and what is it? I don't know.
Are you sure you don't have some
I'm alive.
That black tar inside your lungs?
I don't think I'm going to have anything bursting through. We know already because it seems like it's that process of getting impregnated by alien whatever it is. And
alien black tar. Yeah.
Or babies or whatever it is. It used to be like for a while, it would take hours and stuff like that. Now it takes just mere minutes for the alien to burst out of your chest, because we don't need that anticipation before, you know?
Yeah, man, the economy's so bad, we don't even have time to, let the baby bursts in our stomachs. We have to rush them out. This is the problem with corporate America.
What's that?
It's like not even guys who get impregnated by alien monsters have parental leave in the future, right?
Right.
So it's like in the earlier alien films, the guy at least got to eat before he died.
Hang out for a while.
Yeah.
He was there because it felt like it was hours before that alien burst out of his chest, right?
No. So the original alien film.
Yeah.
They wore space suits, and they go to the eggs. And the eggs open up, and the vagina monster plops onto his face.
The face hugger.
The face hugger puts the egg inside his stomach, and then they bring him into the spaceship.
They should have quarantined him.
They should have quarantined him, but they didn't. The face hugger died, and then he seemed to be fine, and he was really, really hungry because he got a baby in his belly. He's eating for two. And so they have him in the room eating, and he gets a little queasy because the baby comes out, you know, and everybody goes, look at that. It looks like you.
His water didn't even break. It just went out. Yeah.
So, Mark and I... We're
fans of aliens. We love aliens. We love aliens. The art direction. It's all good. I mean, my favorite movies are the first one, and then two are awesome. Number three is and four is just like, what are you guys even thinking? But then there's Alien versus Predators, and that kind of
got funky
because it's real campy. So it's kind of had some more fun with it. And then of course they came out with Prometheus, which is kind of like dry in a way. And then this.
It was stoic. It was a search for God. Mm-hmm. Who created who?
Yeah.
What's going on? Well, in Prometheus, I don't know if you guys have seen the movie or not, but it's some really hot space jockeys. They go from planet to planet, sacrificing themselves by eating their delicious space black tar. And that melts their bodies and creates DNA on the planet, which gives the rice to life, which is why in Star Trek, all the aliens have heads, arms, and legs. Right. Because it's like, and I have a secret belief that the Predator franchise, the Alien franchise, and the Star Trek franchise and the Star Wars franchise are all going to merge into one singularity.
Maybe eventually if Disney buys them all, because Star Wars and Star Trek are now, aren't they kind of compatible?
They're owned by the same company? Yeah. No, that's Paramount and Disney. Okay. So those are different companies. But J.J. Abrams did direct one and the other.
And he had R2-D2 floating in space in Star Trek, did he not?
And the aliens from E.T. Serve in the Galactic Senate.
Ah.
Yes. But in Alien Covenant, We go back to the roots of what Alien, I ultimately think, is. It's not a fear fantasy about male and female genitalia and men getting impregnated by freaky, you know, gender non-conforming space monsters.
Why do you feel like the alien monster is gender non-conforming?
Because its head shaped like a penis, but the face hugger is a vagina. There's male and female genitalia, and H.R. Giger in many interviews has been very clear saying that it's about our fear of the human body and our fear of gender ambiguity.
So we're being attacked by genitalia.
We're being attacked by our own hang-ups. But ultimately, I think Alien is a workplace drama like The Office, Mad Men, which is people who are stuck in a tiny little space with asshole coworkers, with bad management,
poor lighting,
a bad corporate environment. That Yutani Wayland Corporation is a terrible place to work for. They provide no parental leave, at least. And ultimately, they all get fucked up. And I learned about this because I had a really shitty job one time. And I woke up one day to go to work, and the dream was about me being at work. And everybody was fearing for their lives from that alien monster.
Well, it's probably just like a bad customer that comes in.
No. It was that you're stuck in a job in a crowded environment with, you know.
And you can't get out. Otherwise, you'll get fired. Or if like it's a movie in space, you'll go out into space and you'll freeze to death.
And the Weyland-Yutani Corporation, for some reason, thinks it's a really good idea to have emotionally unstable people running a spaceship millions and millions of miles away from Earth where they can't do anything. And so we're going to tell you about Alien Covenant, and there's a lot of spoilers, and we're about 9 minutes into the show. So if you guys want to you want to go see the movie, you don't want these spoilers, skip like down to like 40 minutes down through the show, and we'll not talk about this. So this is the thing about Alien Covenant. Its original title was to be Paradise Lost.
Oh, from Milton's book.
Yeah,
which is supposed to be about like the fall of man
and the fall of God. That God ultimately gets destroyed by man's creation, the machine and technology. Yes. And it's Michael Fassbender, you know, up to no good. And it's very much like a Star Trek Data versus Lore. I don't know if you guys saw that.
Let's explain a little bit of the situation here so we can get a little bit of the plot. So it's the Covenant, the
spaceship Covenant.
Covenant is going out into space, so they're going to go colonize a planet. And then all of a sudden they have some distress to the vehicle, and so they get woken up from their sleep by Michael Fassbender, who also plays a robot called Walter, right?
Yeah, so, he's named after Liberace.
And so he's a nice guy.
He's been
upgraded since David, because David was too human and not subservient enough to the people. And so he wakes them up, and they answer this. They find a distress call, so they go to answer it. And so they go to this planet. They just land on the planet, and they start investigating. And then they discover David's there, and then all shit. Hell breaks loose. Now, to me at this point in time, I'm just kind of like, you're supposed to be going to this other planet. You get a distress call from somewhere. Okay, maybe you might want to go check it out. Why would you send almost your entire crew out of the planet? Why would you not like have any kind of safety protocols? You couldn't send a droid down there. You couldn't look around.
They had Walter. Send Walter down there.
You know, go look around, Walter, and tell us what's up.
Of course, if they did that, there'd be no movie. And David fought each other. Because I want to, you know, here's some spoilers. They have this awesome robot on robot sex and fight.
They don't have sex.
They kiss each other.
Of course, the evil one kisses the other one. And the other one's just kind of like, I don't know what's happening here.
It's like, you know, anytime a gay man, you know, has his best friend who's straight. And he gets him drunk and he kisses him, and he's like, what? It's kind of that thing. I was hoping, like, you know, Walter was like, yes, this is what I wanted. Robot sex, gay robot sex. But no, we didn't get that, unfortunately. So, you know, it's back to Star Trek. You have a evil android and you have a good android, right? And they're fighting for humanity, just like Data and Lore. We're sort of teaming up with the Borg to fight for the future of humanity. In this case, Walter and David are teaming up with the alien monsters and that alien technology to fight for the human future of humanity and all life in the universe, ultimately. But I really liked the, you know, that David's little demented Leonardo da Vinci workplace. I thought that was fun.
Because what we discover is he went to this planet with the person that he left the last planet with from Prometheus. They land on this planet. Elizabeth Shaw.
Who was a Christian.
Right. She was a Christian?
Yes.
How do you know that?
She believed in God. She had a little Christ necklace and she kept kissing it throughout the Prometheus movie.
Oh, and so this movie, it's kind of weird because I wondered why they called this movie Covenant, which is, you know, Covenant has religious overtones because, you know, you have the Ark of the Covenant. And there was the agreement between the Jewish people and Yahweh that they would worship him. And so I kept looking kind of for that in this. I did see a Jewish star on one of the people. And then there was another guy, Billy Crudup. He becomes a captain after James Franco is in this movie
for a second.
And you're kind of like, why is James Franco even in this movie? He's a captain who gets all burned up in his sleeping chamber. But you do see a flashback of him climbing a mountain. And you're kind of like, why would you even, unless he's going to be in another movie, like a prequel to this? I don't know. And then you have Billy Crudup becomes the captain. And he says to somebody, just like, I wasn't the captain before because I'm a person of faith. And they didn't want to have a person of faith in charge of this thing.
Yeah. In the future, Christians have a really hard time, and so ultimately
navigating spaceships.
Now they're running spaceship, and just like Trump's America, you have this insecure right winger Christian fundamentalist in charge of the thing, and he's just making this spontaneous choice to send everybody to this random planet just because he heard a signal, right, on a hunch. And so, you know, it's back to this idea that, like, Alien is ultimately a movie about having a bad boss, bad management, bad coworkers, and you're forced to do something you don't want to do, and you know it's going to go shit, and it does go to shit, and there's an evil robot, and he's making shit up, and he's going to fuck you with those eggs and put that pussy monster on your face, and you're fucked.
Well, and the thing is, too, is, like, you know, the thing that I really did like about it, and you mentioned this, is David's Leonardo da Vinci little cave, his man cave, where he has all sorts of drawings of little monsters that he's created over the years to wipe out humanity, because that's his job. He thinks that humanity must be stopped, that they're evil, and that he has now created something called a perfect monster, a perfect creature. And we're kind of like, what? I mean, why is this creature perfect and humans are not? What is so perfect about that alien monster?
Well, I would have liked to seen also the plot line of, like, why do these space jockeys create life on other planets, right? And what was their philosophical background? What did Dr. Shaw say to them when she actually got onto their planet?
You know? I don't know if she ever really talked to them, or did David just get rid of them all?
We don't really know.
Yeah,
it's kind of unclear, but it's certainly clear that he performed scientific experiments on Dr. Shaw, and it would have been nice to. Some people are saying, like, it would have been nice to see Dr. Shaw give birth to the queen. We don't really understand or figure out how the queen alien monster fits into the whole biology of the egg, face hugger, xenomorph.
Yeah, it's life not cycle. Really all well thought out, is it?
No.
You know, because it's like sometimes the alien just kills them, sometimes it impregnates them, or they make these eggs.
And so I just started reflecting on all the alien movies because, like, I really like a lot of the moments, even Prometheus to me. Had some really fun moments in it. You know, I felt like those, you know, first Thirsty Girls, it's like the space jockeys were hot, and you know, the following Halloween, seeing all these, like, hot muscular guys, you know, shaving their heads and painting themselves white and wearing, like,
one guy did
underwear
that.
A few guys did on the internet, actually. Okay. and it was really great, and now, you know, the space jockey, when we see a shot of them, they're just like us, just big schlumps.
I gotta say, when he landed on the planet, when they first come to the planet, because when David gets the planet with the space jockeys, yeah, like you said, they look like schmooze. They're just kind of like these just white people. They're not, you know, they're not like that big, giant, muscular hunk.
They look like people in Chicago in February.
Except all bald.
And all bald. It was not a pretty sight. You're like, oh, where's the hot guy? You know, so and I started reflecting on the title of the movies, and I was like, you know, I've heard these titles before, you know, the fascination with like sexuality and isolation and angst. And I was like, oh yeah, these are basically like titles of gay Broadway plays.
What?
And so I pulled up a list of Alien books and famous.
Because there's been more books than there has been.
Oh, yeah, there's tons of books. There's the Alien verse, you know.
Okay. Because all I know is like Resurrection, Prometheus, Covenant.
Exactly. So Alien, I'm going to pull, I'm going to quiz you, Mark, and you never heard this before.
No.
Although it's kind of unfair because you are familiar with a lot of LGBT culture, and so some of these are going to.
Okay.
So I'm going to give you some easy ones and then some hard ones. Ready? So you're going to say gay or alien?
Okay.
Ready? Alien. Angels in America.
Gay.
Correct. Alien. Drag.
Gay.
Correct. Alien. Harvest.
Alien.
Correct. Alien. Music of the Spears.
Gay.
Wrong.
Ooh.
Aliens, the Laramie Project.
You're so stupid.
Come on.
Gay.
Yes. Aliens, lips together, teeth apart.
Gay.
Correct. Aliens, original sin.
Gay.
Wrong.
It's the book.
Aliens, Lonely Planet.
Alien.
Wrong. That's a gay play.
Okay.
Aliens, Well of Loneliness.
That's gay.
Correct.
It's a lesbian.
Yeah, it's a lesbian one. Aliens, River of Pain.
Gay.
Wrong. <It's>, Aliens, Colonial Marines.
That's aliens.
Yes, correct. And last but not least, Alien Isolation.
Alien.
Correct. Yay. You're pretty good score at this.
I did pretty good.
Well, you guys
some of them
at
were
home,
very obvious.
Did you? I thought the Laramie Project.
I almost got that wrong. I almost got it wrong.
What about Jonesy the Cat? In the future, nobody has pets anymore. And I loved Jonesy the Cat, who managed to survive. Everybody else got eaten alive. In, you know, the Alien 3 movie, the dog got impregnated by the alien monster.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and gave birth to a dog alien.
Was that 3 or 4?
The one on the planet where the prisoners were.
Oh, the prisoners.
Yeah,
okay.
I think it was 3rd or 4th.
That's 3rd, yeah.
And to me, it was like, you know, it would have been nice to have like a parrot on one of, or a cat or something. You know, there were so many good things missing from it. You know, the gay couple that was supposed to be in Covenant.
Yeah, the people were people were kind of outraged about what, like, did you even notice them?
When one of the characters died, the other guys, it could have been like he was
his
really
brother.
Close. And it wasn't. It didn't look like it was somebody who had been in a relationship with another person.
It doesn't look like they were, you know, bumping uglies or anything. It could have been brothers or something.
But we got a gay kiss, and that was Michael Fassbender kissing Michael Fassbender before he fucked shit up.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was just like, I don't know.
And not only was it gay, it was also incestuous, too, because he referred to him as his brother.
That's right. Michael Fassbender, I got to say, he looks hot in his little unitard. I wouldn't mind having him a gay kiss, but save the, you know, the fucking me shit up afterwards.
Save the genocide. I don't really want any of that.
Alien ultimately is taps on a lot of you know, the mainstream public's anxiety about sexuality, gender nonconformity, and genitalia. And, you know, of course, we are treated towards the end of the movie to a lot of running around in the spaceship. And then there's a couple, which you guys have seen in the trailer, where they're having sex in the shower. And of course, the alien monster's tail goes up between the man's legs and up his ass. Oh, no.
Listen, your sphincter isn't gay. It's just, you know, whether you're a straight man or a gay man, it's the same amount of pleasure. So don't think about your asshole as being gay or not.
I just really didn't like any of the characters in the new Alien Covenant movie. I felt they were selfish. They were eager to put their teammates, their spaceship mates,
at
in
risk.
Danger.
Yeah.
They
no safety protocols whatsoever going on at all.
You land in a foreign planet you've never been to before, and you feel like you don't need a space helmet? What year is this?
War of the Worlds? When was War of the Worlds written? Like 1890 or something like that?
What was the plot of War of the Worlds?
The Martians come down, they land on the planet, they're taking over the planet, and you know what kills them? The fucking common cold.
And this is not some alternate reality. This is not another, you know, species. This is us in the future.
Yeah.
We have already corporations, the Atani Corporation that creates the gas ranges that you see on the Cooking with Drag Queens.
That's not Utani. It's something else.
It's Atani Corporation, yeah. Not Utani.
Yeah.
And
we met one of the guys that worked for the Utani Corporation. We're like, this is the same corporation from Aliens. We're like, I do not know.
I do not know what you're talking about. But no. But yeah, I don't know. It just feels like they're sort of the writers, the people who are making this movie are just kind of like, well, we know it's going to make as much money as Guardians of the Galaxy. Actually made $38 million in its box office debut.
Covenant?
Covenant, yeah.
$38 million is not a lot for a big blockbuster. What did Guardians of the Galaxy? It was like $140 million.
It was expected to make $40 million in it. So it's not performing great, but they're still making money. So that means you're going to get freaky, funky xenomorphs till the end of time.
You know, and I'll probably continue to go see them, but this last movie was really disappointing, especially this ending, you know, because you're just kind of like, I don't, should we talk? We'll talk about
give the ending away. So this is spoilers.
I'll give the ending right now. Too. So just skip ahead 5 minutes if you don't really want to know. So shit goes down on the planet. David and Walter have a fight. They make out. They have a fight.
They kiss some more.
And then the spaceship's taking off. One of them makes it back to the ship. And of course, you know that it's David.
They have a stowaway.
That David is the guy, that he's the one and the other robot's back on the planet. Because otherwise, what other option would they have had? And so he's on board, and he manages to smuggle on some aliens. And they discover it's him. The one person discovers it's him right after he puts her to sleep. As she's going to sleep, she discovers, oh, no, it's the wrong robot, and starts crying, and then you're just like, what the hell? And you just kind of feel cheated because it's such an obvious ending, and it could have been so different. It could have been, you know, they discover it's him while they're doing something, and then it could have like made it go a little longer. It could have been more excitement. It could have shown, hey, these people are actually intelligent and not stupid. And then it could have had still like maybe you found out he just still smuggled something on board and got away with it. Anything, but this ending was just so terrible.
If you have a hunch that the android that you have on board may be the evil android, run some diagnostics.
Yeah, hook him up to something.
You know, and why do they not come with an off button?
You know, what? Take his head off.
They're super strong. They already have been proven to be capable of fucking shit up on, because they talk about that in the movie, that the David series was, you know, scaring people and messing things up.
I think David may have been one of a kind.
Maybe so, but Walter, where was Walter off switch? He should have had an off switch. Didn't you notice that Walter no longer had an off switch? Maybe it's not Walter.
Yeah, it's not. And one thing I did notice though too is like, you know, the ship, the computer on board is called Mother, and Mother talks to you like it did in all the other films. And this one kind of sounded a little bit like Sigourney Weaver, so I'm just like, is that her? Is that her? And I checked the credits, it wasn't her, but she definitely was trying to do a Sigourney Weaver impersonation, I think.
Yeah, I think Sigourney Weaver's voice will be used for a lot of things. She's also the tree goddess lady now. Oh, wait. Yeah, because...
In Avatar,
she, I guess, got absorbed into the tree, but she doesn't get absorbed into the body. So I'm guessing in the next Avatar movie, she's going to be the voice of the tree goddess.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure.
You know, people love Sigourney Weaver. She was really missed in this movie. There was nobody charismatic, nobody I was rooting for. I was rooting for the xenomorph. I wanted the xenomorph to win. It bothered me that they blew off the xenomorph like, you know, so quickly. It was just like,
there was one really good scene because the xenomorph, like, you know, just after David got on the This is the vehicle as they were leaving the planet.
Yeah.
They the rescue spaceship. They were fighting the xenomorph out on the spacecraft as it's floating through air, and they used this crane that lifted things. And the crane was like a claw machine, like a grappler, and it looked like the mouth that comes out of the alien's mouth, and it grabbed a hold of it and trapped it.
I think you liked it because it reminds you of your favorite.
The claw machine.
The claw machine.
Yeah.
And I'm like,
I guess they fit the claw machine. They made the people that own the claw machine sign some, because there's a federation of the claw machine people of the gaming. And, you know, they used to have this thing where with the claw machine, it was set on a random rotation that every now and then it was rigged. It wouldn't grasp on. Like it would at other times, right? And so now, yeah, it's supposed to be more based on skill. And that's my thought, too, is like I always, when I look at a claw machine, I look to see what is easy to get. If it looks like you have, if the stuff's too packed in, you're not going to get it, don't even bother.
You sound like an addict justifying their cocaine addiction.
It's winning stuffed animals out of a machine. It's not that big of a deal.
But you, like, you have a pocket full of quarters, and you walk past a claw machine, and you'll be like, I got to play that claw machine. I got to get that stuffed teddy bear. And I'm like, and you don't even give it to me.
You wouldn't want it anyway.
I don't want that teddy bear. But it's not the winning the teddy bear that it's the claw. It's you fishing it out of the claw machine.
I get to play Alien.
Yes. And in the future, I guess a claw machine is a very handy thing to have on a spaceship going to another planet.
Well, it was the cargo loader.
Yeah.
So you probably want to be able to grab stuff. You know,
I was missing for the main character to say, get away from her, you bitch. But of course, there was no child. Mm-hmm. There was no MacGuffin. There was no prize. No. There was no trophy. There was nothing to fight for.
Yeah.
It was just a gloomy planet that already had been destroyed by David, this demented robot. There's just nothing to live for. It was such a grim future, and there was nothing to fight for. I was just been like, you know what? Impregnate me. At least I'll feel something. Yeah. At least put that pussy face hugging monster on my face so I can feel something finally.
You know that scene where she goes like, get away from her, you bitch. So she's in that giant elevator and it opens up and she's in that machine. I've been doing some
exoskeleton
and I've been doing some catering lately, and they have like these giant elevators in a lot of these buildings here in Chicago. And when it opens up,
a freight elevator,
and like they're like enormous, like I'm like they're huge. And I was just in one of them and it opened it up. I was like, get away from her, you bitch. And they all looked at me like I was crazy. I'm like, aliens.
I know. We love you guys. The people who listen to this podcast, because you guys get our jokes. It's like, you know, for us, we go on to our other jobs in the world and we make these same jokes to them, and they're all like, you're not doing your podcast right now. Stop doing that. You know.
So, yeah.
Prometheus 2, the Covenant.
Save your money. Wait till it comes on Netflix or something.
Unless you really like, you know, the Alien franchise and you just can't get enough.
Sorry.
Go ahead. I'm used to getting interrupted.
Yeah. I guess it's not that bad. If you really like it, go see it. Go see it on a discount movie night. Go see it on a matinee or something. Or spend the money on it. But don't be like, oh, this movie's amazing.
If you're a fan of the alien monsters and you want to see more of them doing more of the same things, go see it. I have never been, though, in a blockbuster movie where a good portion of the audience walked out on the film. Hmm. Or maybe they knew the movie sucked, but they still wanted to see it anyways, so they snuck in.
Yeah, 'cause I think so.
We saw a lot of ushers coming in with their red wands, and I was like, ooh, there's a shakedown. And I was like, I found myself more fascinated with the ushers trying to kick people out of the movie theater than I was with the movie itself. That's not good. Meanwhile, we've seen a trailer for the new Star Trek Discovery, where it actually is a racially diverse crew.
Oh, absolutely. Without it, it's the Discover She, as we call it, since it's all the leads are all women.
Yes.
For the most part.
Finally.
Right. And it opens up. It says 10 years before Kirk, Spock, and the Enterprise, there was the Discovery. you know. And so, yeah, and so it opens up and you first see our heroine, the person that's starring in it, is Sonequa Martin-Green, and she plays Michael Burnham, and I guess there's going to do 15 episodes of it. And she is working with Michelle Yeoh, who plays her captain, and they're walking on this desert planet, and
Michelle Yeoh is from Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon.
Yeah, and she's also in the Guardians of the Galaxy, too. She was one of the Raiders.
I didn't realize that.
And so I think she'll have a bigger role in part 7. And so they're on this desert planet. They're looking around, and they appear as like Sonique was like, "Where are we going? What are we doing? Why are we here? We've got no map. We can't guide ourselves." And then she starts talking to her and saying, "Like, you've served under me for 7 years, and it's time to talk about you getting your own command." And so you
cut the umbilical cord.
Cut the umbilical cord. And so you kind of see it's like we think that she'll probably become a captain, and that's going to be her story arc. But, like, you know, is when you see and you look at like somebody like Hillary Clinton, people don't like women that try for power. Like, if they like a heroine, the heroine that has to have like this unusual circumstance thrust upon them. And they often can say that about a lot of heroes, too, is like they get, you know, they become heroes because they didn't want the job, but it gets thrust upon them. And so that's why they're trying to make her as like a sympathetic kind of person. And you see their uniforms in the next kind of shot, and they're very much like Enterprise. So they're not the, you know, the Star Trek that you know from Captain Kirk.
I love those pajamas. In the future, we get to wear pajamas to work. Yeah. I don't want to wear a hot unitard cuts in my groin.
Well, they're like, they're jumpsuits. You know, it's like the romper for men, but with fully elongated sleeves, and the pant legs go like all the way down to the floor.
I like the Star Trek uniform, and like, we bought some at a costume shop, and for a while I was just using it, wearing it around the house, and I was like, one of these days they're gonna beam me up, Mark.
Well, do you ever wonder if that uniform's like a giant diaper too? Because it looks like it's impractical to take it off, and like anytime you want to crap, you know. Plus, you're in space, so you know, they might have fabric back then, like in the future, where you could just crap and piss in your stuff, and it just gets absorbed. Right, or transport it out.
They never show somebody using the bathroom in Star Trek.
Exactly. And it's also like, you know, because you're in that thing and you want to take that thing off, it's crazy. Or can you just transport the shit right out of your rectum?
I think they might be transporting the poop out.
Okay.
But that might be not a good idea, because if they misalign that, there goes your kidneys into space.
Well, and then we're getting little clips, so we're trying to piece together all clips.
So
then, right?
Let's talk about the.
And so the next clip, I have it all laid out here. And so if you see in the next scene, you see the hologram Sarek, who is Spock's father.
Yeah.
Right. And he seems like he's a mentor to our central character, you know, Sonequa, you know, who plays Michael.
Sonequa.
And so if you get confused,
too bad they don't call her Sonequa; they're calling her Michael. And I'm like, that's a man's name.
Well,
like,
it's also a girl's name too, I guess, in some way. Or it's unisex.
Michelle.
No, but Michelle is a female variation of Michael. But like, there's a famous actor, Michael Learned, who's whatever. So it's Micah, just means Micah of
Micah,
God.
Yeah. But not Michael.
Yeah.
Okay.
So L, when you have L on the end of the last name, it means of God. So it's like Micah of God.
All right.
And so he's trying to tell her that, like, you know, there's something going on and people need a leader and they need something to rally around. And so I'm kind of thinking like it's a, because, you know, it's Star Trek. So, you know, it's kind of a reference to like, they're just trying to say like, fuck Trump. Because they're in some ways trying to comment on their time, because that's something that Star Trek likes to do.
And we're all stuck with this asshole. It's like Trump's right now touring the Middle East and Israel. I think it's like how many days is he?
I don't know how many days he's gone, but he was after 2 days. The White House is just like, he's really tired.
I'm like, I would be tired too, you know, but I guess he doesn't have his bucket of KFC and his, you know, big gulp of Diet Coke.
And so the next thing we see, like, a hologram Sarek. So it's interesting that we're going to see probably a lot of Spock's dad, you know, who married, you know, a woman, you know, a human. And then he's talking to a younger version of our hero, because you see like this young person that's attired in Vulcan and has dark skin and a Vulcan haircut and everything like that. And he's saying to her, you will never learn Vulcan. Your tongue seems too human. And so you're wondering, is that her? Does she have Vulcan ears? Because we haven't seen her ears yet.
She's a Vulcan.
Is she a Vulcan, or is she like half human, half Vulcan? Because remember, this is the fucked up thing, right? And so we know when they rebooted the series and they had the new timeline, right? Everything from like 10, like what is it, since Kirk's birth, right, is
an
alternate timeline. So it's an alternate timeline from anything we've ever seen before. So anything could happen. But, you know, the shitty thing about that, though, is like Enterprise, everything that's ever happened on the movie, the TV show Enterprise, that's still real. Because
oh,
that doesn't get affected at all. And so we don't know. Yeah. It's like, is she human? And so, you know, and so if he knows her when she was young, will we see a young Spock? And how cool would that be if, like, a young, hot teen Spock, like, took over the whole show? Like, E-Chop and Voyager. Yeah, you remember how he took over all of Voyager? That didn't happen.
That never happened. E-Chop. He was the... Yeah. So, in Voyager, towards the final seasons, they had Baby Borg. Mm-hmm. It was twin boys with very... their costumes... left little to the imagination.
They had plump little butts. So you're just like, damn, those little boys have butts.
That was pedo bear approved.
And then there was a girl, and then there was A-Chop, and then there was another one,
wait,
too.
Wait, so explain to people who don't know what we're talking about. Okay. So there was a twin boys, there was a girl, and then there was an angst-ridden teenager, and then there was a power-hungry preteen who's their leader.
Right, and these kids were all inside of Borg maturation chambers, but because there was some kind of virus or whatever on their ship... the adults all died, and so they came out of their maturation chamber too early. Voyager rescued them and took them.
So it was like Lord of the Flies, not Lord of the Rings, Lord of the Flies, where all the boys are stranded on an island and they sort of attack each other. Mm-hmm. So in this situation, it was referencing that book and later on film, where the kids were to the left of their own devices, had devolved into chaos.
Right.
So because the Borg were so attracted to order and organization, they were very a very volatile entity. And so thankfully, 7 of 9, Mother Hen whipped them into shape. And that was a new sitcom, 7 of 9, Reluctant Mother.
Now we see also too, we see they're engaged in the Klingons and something, and the Klingons kind of look like they did from the Star Trek movies, the new movies. So they've have a, they're not so
they don't look like biker gangs from the 90s.
Yeah, like, they look a little different.
They don't look like Mexican meth dealers from Arizona from 1989. Like,
and so they
look more like
eggheads.
No,
their heads
are
more egg-like.
They're also spiky and they look more alien. They look much less relatable, which I'm concerned about the stylistic choice of making them look like that. Because the fun thing about the Klingons was that they were badasses. We could relate to them. We wanted to be, you know, one of the most costumed sci-fi characters ever are Klingons. And for years in these conventions, people learned Klingon. They dressed up as Klingons. They got married as Klingons. I don't see a lot of fans of the Star Trek franchise dressing up as these new Klingons.
Oh, because the outfit's going to be too much.
It looks extreme. It looks uncomfortable. It looks prickly. It looks unwieldy. So I'm curious to see what they do with them and if they make these Klingons maybe... they're one step from the meth Mexican biker gangs look, but it would be nice to
see them. What their storyline is going to be, because I know in the movie with Enterprise's the new reboot, that their energy plant, their energy moon has already exploded, and so their empire is in chaos. Because when we saw Kirk and Spock, you know, their empire wasn't necessarily in chaos. We didn't know anything about their moon exploding. That was something that came out of what was it, the undiscovered country. And so I think we'll see there's going to be huge fights between them, but then also too, that's where the peace comes from too, because they know that they have to rely on each other, and
they have to get along.
And then there's something going on and they're fighting, there's some kind of battle, and then we see Doug Jones, who plays Lieutenant Saru. And he's dressed up, and you've seen him play aliens in a couple of other things. He's often costumed because he's a super thin guy.
Yeah.
And so he has kind of, he was in the movie Hellboy. He played that amphibious guy in Hellboy. And so he does one line. And so he may kind of be kind of like the Data or that person that's kind of
the android, like, who doesn't have feelings, right, but wants to have feelings,
or is just kind of clueless about certain things. Because his line in the trailer is, "My people were biologically determined to sense the coming of death." Like, you know, we've seen people. And you're kind of like, well, we've seen genetically altered people before, you know, like the Jem'Hadar and stuff like that. But it's just like, aren't all people kind of like biologically determined to sense death? You know, I don't know if he was trying to make a joke out of it, or if he was just kind of like constructed for like that was his only purpose.
I guess
so. We won't know.
Michelle Yeoh as the captain. How soon before they kill her off or enslave her?
I don't know. She's giving me some Genevieve Bujold energy because, you know, she was the original.
Genevieve Bujold?
She was the original captain on Voyager, and they taped it.
And she was terrible.
Well, she was.
You watch the video. She's not good.
She's not good in that role. She's a brilliant actress. She's got a strong career, but it's just not something for, like, it wasn't for her. Like, they said she wasn't really up to the task because she's a movie actress more than anything, and so it didn't work well. And it was kind of stiff and odd. And also, too, I think maybe because, you know, English wasn't her first language, and maybe it's the same with Michelle. It's just kind of like it was weird because I was hearing her talk, and it kind of had that same kind of cadence as Genevieve did.
Well, it you know, CBS is hanging their new service All Access on the new Star Trek Discovery, so they're certainly putting a lot of energy and creativity, and there's been a lot of anxiety. Lots of people have been fired. I'm just hoping they don't, you know, corporate meeting it to death, and it just feels like right now the Star Trek franchise has lost its way. And
this is the same thing, and we're it's, you know, because some people are complaining and they're saying that there's not enough white guys in it, and that it's female focused, and so people are wondering, is this same the kind of trend that they have with Ghostbusters? And I said trend, not trend, because they took the D out because it's all chicks, right? So is that did that joke work?
Oh, I was like, took me 5 minutes to get it, but
well, because your protagonists, the main ones are female, and so is it going to come up with up against that same kind of outrage that Ghostbuster did, and was that outrage successful in promoting the movie Ghostbusters?
Well, you know, I don't think the reason the new Ghostbusters reboot failed was because they didn't cast funny comedians or they cast an all female cast. I think they failed because it's not their project. It's not their imagination. It's not their creativity. You put Melissa McCarthy, Kristen Wiig, Kate McKinnon, and Leslie Jones, even Chris Hemsworth, Sigourney Weaver, Dan Aykroyd, Bill Murray in a movie together, and it sucks that much. It's not because of the comedian's fault. It's because whoever wrote this piece of shit movie did a bad job, because they were sort of, their hands were tied to the original Ghostbusters franchise. And ultimately, you know, we've seen Kristen Wiig and Melissa McCarthy shine in Bridesmaids. So it's not that they're not capable of making a film that everybody wants to watch, that's funny, that's inventive. It just means that, you know, Hollywood's trend of trying to resurrect franchises it ultimately leads us in dark directions. And I think the whole idea of marketing, you know, Sony Pictures turned the new Ghostbusters reboot into a feminist polemic. And if you didn't go see the new Ghostbusters movie, or you spoke out against it, you were sexist.
I got to say, some women in the audience, they cheered the movie rather than laughed.
And to me, I was like, that's not going to win. But, at the end of the day, it's not going to bring gender equality. It's not going to fight sexism. I'm a dude, but I'm also a gender nonconforming person. And to me, it's like, it's not the kind of future I envision for everybody. And it's not the way I think about equality. But ultimately, it's, you know, it takes many voices to bring about a better world. And so maybe Sony Pictures turning Ghostbusters into a feminist polemic, and the same thing with the Star Trek Discovery, might actually lead us into a better place. Ultimately, you know, Milo Yiannopoulos started trolling Leslie Jones on Twitter, and Leslie Jones, instead of blocking him or banning him, started responding to him and made him into a cause celeb of the alt-right wing of the Nazi party, and made this troll a career, gave him a career. And so to me, it's like we have an alt-right media personality who's making lots of money touring and selling books and all this shit because of the Ghostbusters movie. And to me, that's a step back.
That's wrong. But, you know, people are freaking out. And the thing is, though, too, is like the people on Twitter that are freaking out, because like I'll read you some of these tweets, because to me, these aren't real Star Trek fans. These are just people that probably never watched Star Trek and just hate it. And they say, oh, great, a woman captain again. Another flop about to come. A black woman captain? Yeah, I think I'll pass. Nice job on political correctness ruining Star Trek. Watch, there will be a gay couple and a transgender in Star Trek. Political correctness, liberals, feminists, etc., destroying everything. These have to be like those kind of robots, right? Yeah. I mean, I just can't. Nobody that watches Star Trek and understands Star Trek messages is going to react like this. I might say there might be a little bit of misogyny, maybe a little bit of racism, but I wouldn't think it would be so overt, you know? Another great franchise ruined by Hollywood's feminist agenda.
In the origins of Star Trek and Gene Roddenberry was attempts to bring about gender equality and racial, gender, sexual diversity into the series as best as they could at the time. Mm-hmm. And certainly in the Next Generation, they had a whole season where the dudes wore skirts, you know, and they
tunics.
They had
but they wouldn't do a gay. They wouldn't do a gay storyline.
Well, they tried. They had a planet of species that were played by gender nonconforming women, but they were meant to be asexual. And Riker fell in love with one of them, and it was illegal on their planet to fall in love with someone of a gender. It was sort of like the LGBT planet gone right wing. Mm-hmm. So you had to be gay, and you had to be a gender. And if you decided you had a gender and you fell in love with somebody who had a gender, that you were to be corrected and cured. And ultimately Riker was fighting for, you know, it was meant to be a metaphor for LGBT people at the time, but it was kind of awkward and clumsy.
Yeah, it was really weird. So the series will premiere, I guess, now they're saying in the fall. And so they have like 15 episodes, because it seems like now series or cycles or seasons or whatever seem to be going from around 10 to 15 episodes, unless you're like a big television show or a big network, and maybe you'll get like 23 episodes. But man, I miss the days back in the days. It's like, you know, Voyager was like, that was like 26 episodes a year.
26 a year? Yeah.
You're like half the year you got an episode.
Chakotay, I want you to write another hastily episode where I talk about coffee in the nebula and try to decode a celestial body by using classical music.
And so I'm looking forward to a little more lens flare, because I think I saw some lens flare in the... But hopefully it won't be as much as that first movie.
The problem I have with the look of Discovery, though, is that it does feel like a fan film. It feels like those fan movies that you see.
Oh, I think the production's much better.
So hopefully it will have some elements of the pajama-wearing, hotel lobby, chill Connecticut culture of the Star Trek, the Deep Space Nine, Next Generation, and Voyager series that I personally really enjoy.
I think we'll have,
but we're not going to get any of that.
I think we're going to see a lot of violence and a lot of action is what we're going to get. But you know,
and freaky looking Klingons.
But Sinequa, you know, has a lot of charm. So she's a very beautiful woman. She has a lot of charm, and so it'll be very interesting. It'll, you know, I could watch her on TV all day. So I'm looking forward to it. Another person I could watch on TV all day is Vivacious.
Yes. Where's my fan? Oh, you got me off. Hold on a second, mother. Is once again on television on Saturday Night Live, Vivacious, among, and, you know, other people who are not worth mentioning, were dancing next to Katy Perry on Saturday Night Live.
Swish, switch, bitch. And Vivacious, that fan over and over again, right in Katy Perry's face.
She was like, was awesome. Katy Perry got nervous.
I think she was. She was like, oh my God, this woman's hitting me with her face.
I just broke my fan. Leave the fan flicking to the professionals, Fausto.
Yes.
Vivacious is laughing right now.
So, and you actually knew that she was going to be performing, right?
So, Vivacious and I talk on the phone all the time, and she was like, she came up to me, she was like really excited. I was like, I haven't talked to you in like 4 days. What's going on? And she said, oh, I've been busy with a project. You know, honey, they're working me down to the bone. I've been, you know, I was like, I hope it's a good work. She's like, oh, yes, it's a very exciting project. And she's like, can I share it with you? And I was, the way she phrased it to me, I was like, you know, I paused and I said, if I don't want you to share it with me because it sounds really important. And if it gets leaked, I'm worried that you're going to blame me. Mm-hmm. And I don't want our friendship compromised because you feel like I had betrayed your trust even when I hadn't.
Right.
I've gone through that with other drag queens already, mm-hmm. you know? So I knew, at least in this point in time, I said, you know what? Just let me be pleasantly surprised. And I was surprised. I did tell her, though, I said, I really, really love that pink outfit that mm-hmm. she made that outfit with the green spikes coming out. I said to us, like, if you get a chance to wear that on television again, that's going to really stand out. It's going to look fierce and fabulous. And that's what she wore. So I was I was like, yay, my favorite outfit next to, of course, you know, the Ornacia and the red outfit with the black spikes.
Does she even wear Ornacia out anymore? So the outfit that she wore did not have green spikes.
It has green spikes coming out of the neck.
Oh.
Yeah, you can't see, maybe you can't see them the way it's lit.
I see, because she's wearing some kind of big, giant, like, corset bustier kind of thing.
I know my Vivacious fashion inside and out.
Yeah, I love
because
her.
I'm actually, you know, editing the photos for the show, and so I stare at these images mm-hmm. all the time. And
so,
yes,
yeah, you know
I said to her, I was like, that looks really good. You look great. It's a new look that a lot of people may not necessarily be familiar with. And so if you get a chance to wear that for whatever it is, please do so. And mm-hmm. so she did.
Well, and that, you know, she was great, but who really stole the show was that backpack kid. The kid at the end, and he just does that, like, his hands, like, switch back and forth really quick. His name is Russell Horning. I guess he's 15 years old.
Where did he come from?
You know, I don't really know much about him. I just know he's got an Instagram, and you can follow him on Instagram, and I think they brought him. Because the thing about it is, you know, you have all these fierce drag queens, and you have this, like, 15-year-old kid coming out with a backpack, and you're just kind of like, and he just kind of moves kind of very slowly, and you're like, what's this kid going to do? But you kind of know, like, it's coming, either that or he just walked in on the set, but then he just, he does his moves, and he really goes, and you're just like, wow, that was amazing. Now, Katy Perry, I guess that song is a diss track. Of Taylor Swift or something. I think I was reading.
People don't like Taylor Swift, but a lot of people like Taylor Swift. But the women in the music industry, mm-hmm. they have like they're frenemies. Like Madonna and Katy Perry. I'm sorry, Madonna and Lady Gaga famously don't mm-hmm. get along with each other, right? Mm-hmm. Katy Perry and Taylor Swift don't get along with each other. Rihanna. I can't remember who.
Rihanna fights with everybody.
Nicki Minaj and Mariah Carey hate each other. Mm-hmm. And of course, famously on American Idol. So it would be good. Can one of our listeners make a chart of the female pop divas and whether they are friends or they hate each other or, you know. Because it's really hard to keep track of all
It's
that.
Hard to keep track of all the fights and who hates what.
Who hates what? Who goes to each other's houses on vacation? You know, it's like, I want to know about these things.
It's nice to see all these pop divas, though, using drag queens as, you know, props for their show. You know, you had...
they were not Miley's, just props. They were their backup dancers.
And you had like Miley Cyrus at the VMAs a few years ago, and then now you have Katy Perry. People are saying that Katy Perry mopped her look, though, for this from Miley Cyrus.
Honey, she mopped that look from Beetlejuice. I was Lila like, if you say Beetlejuice, 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 Lila McQueen's going to show up.
So good on you, Vivacious. Keep it coming. I want to see you more on TV. You
know? That's really nice.
So there's a gay porn.
And you know, to me, it's like, I am a person who really appreciates Vivacious and I've filmed her performing, and she's, if you guys are in New York and get a chance to see her perform, do so. She's really I feel a very underrated RuPaul's Drag Race girl. And I'm glad at least that Katy Perry and Miley Cyrus actually appreciate them the way we do. Mm. You know, I'm like, because these are two really accomplished musicians and who see the magic that Vivacious is. Mm. And I was like, you know, I'm surprised the gay bars don't book Vivacious. Like, you know, this is a person who's on Saturday Night Live and you're booking, you know, some drag queen whose inner saboteur is getting the best of her 6 days a week. What are you doing? Like, what, you know, and the problem is a lot of the people that book these talents actually don't really follow the scene. And so it would be nice to see like someone like Vivacious.
Well, you don't want Vivacious to get too famous because then she'll never talk to you again.
That won't happen.
It might. We've seen it happen.
It happens. It's such a heartache when you become, you know, you become friends with artists and some of these artists succeed. And it's like, sometimes it's like a friend dying, you know, it's like, and sometimes, you know, the friend suffers and their career doesn't go well. And so they try to reconnect with you and it's awkward because they're wanting to kiss their ass the same way their fans kiss their ass. And you're like, I'm somebody who knows you from the past. You know, it's like we're peers. We're not, it's not an unequal relationship. And ultimately that person doesn't want to have anything to do with you anymore, you know? And that's because you're not there going, yes, girl, yes, queen, my queen, you know? So what can you do?
So there's a porn company. It's men.com is under,
investigation.
Well, no, people are mad at them because they're using a didgeridoo as a dildo.
Oh, so, no, she didgeridoo.
Yes. So the sex scene takes place. One guy comes home from Australia with a didgeridoo. For people that don't know what a didgeridoo is, it's an Aboriginal instrument, and they say it's one of the oldest instruments in the world.
It sounds like this. Of course, they can't just do that sound into a microphone. They blow it into it has a very guttural. And I actually think, and correct me if I'm wrong, they're what's actually that? Just doing that into a long pipe. And that's what causes the reverberations is what causes it to actually sound that way.
I'm not sure exactly the mechanism.
Because my friend Skip, the one that plays the tampon, he learned how to play the didgeridoo.
Oh, okay.
And so he was like, I actually got it to do that. It's like a giant flute, basically. Mm-hmm. But anyways, stuck up some guy's ass.
And I guess it has also, too, it has a real like spiritual connotation among Aboriginal people. And they use it for certain ceremonies, like to talk to their ancestors or like to announce the birth of a newborn child. And so they were like,
and in Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, they dance to one of the pop songs.
Oh, yeah. I can't remember what it was, but they had
nothing more that I like to do. Shake Your Groove Thing was the name of the song.
And they had a didgeridoo in it?
Yeah, at the end of it.
Okay. And yeah, and so like the people are very upset about that.
Yeah, and a lot of people were very critical when they used the didgeridoo
in Priscilla.
In Priscilla, yeah. They were like, this is racist.
But they also, you know, they sell them as souvenirs at like, you know, gift shops and stuff like that. So
that's the problem. Like, it's like, you know, a lot of cultures have these very sacred objects, but at the same time, you know, and so they criticize when Westerners or people that are not part of that culture use the in their way. But at the same time, it's like, you know, if it really bothers you that much, you know, you might want to address why it's being sold for, you know, a couple bucks at a gift shop.
And there's a student group in Canada that apologized for including Lou Reed's Take a Walk on the Wild Side in a playlist. I guess they were handing out bus passes, and they decided to create a playlist that is something you might hear, like if you were riding on a bus in like the 70s or 80s. And, of course, you know, there's lyrics in Take a Walk on the Wild Side about riding on a bus. And, you know, because
Hollywood Lawn. So the controversy.
Well, she hitchhiked her way. But
the controversy is over the pronouns he and she in the song The Wild Side. Lou Reed talks about Holly Woodlawn being a person who not was just transgender but also lived on the fringe in the Chelsea Hotel,
right?
And so he told her story really quickly, is that she was a he, then she became a she.
Right. It goes, Holly came from Miami, FLA, hitchhiked her way across the USA, plucked her eyebrows on the way, shaved her legs, and then he was a she. She said, hey, babe, take a walk on the wild side.
And the colored girls go, doot, 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 And then,
and so anyway, and so the,
and then the outrage happened.
The outrage, and they just said, I had to report on it just because, like, anytime it starts off, it has come to our attention. It always reminds me of Chloe Savini. It has come to our attention that the playlist we have had on during a bus pass distribution on Thursday contained a song with a transphobic lyrics. The playlist.
It was sponsored by Absolute Vodka,
Skittles.
Skittles and
Ergen Procknow.
Yeah.
The song was included solely on those terms because it made you feel like you were on a road trip and made in ignorance, as the person making the list did not know or understand the lyrics. We now know the lyrics to the song are hurtful to our friends in the trans community, and we'd like to unreservedly apologize for this error and judgment.
I think that's a shame because it's such an important part of trans history, that song. And the fact that college students felt like they had to apologize for playing. Like, if you don't want to play it, you feel like it's not the right thing to play.
Then don't play it.
Don't play it. It's fine. But, you know, this is a very important part of LGBT history and trans history specifically. And to feel like that this is a tarnishing that student event is really unfortunate. Then again, you know, the internet is no short of right-wing propaganda to say, oh, these college students are too liberal. Look how sensitive they are. Mm-hmm. We need to crush
their
sensitivity, man. Get used to it. And maybe, you know what? Maybe they're just, this is the way they handle it. Maybe they didn't handle it well. They're young college students. They're learning. They're making their way through the world. Cut them some slack.
Well, this is the thing, though, too. You know, is the song true to the trans experience? You know, are you a he one day and then a she the next day? And
that's like most. I would argue that most trans people don't think about their gender in that term. Yeah. But at that time period where the song came out of, and the fact that this is a very important mainstream mention of a very important trans entertainer is can't be denied and should not be forgotten or acknowledged.
Yeah. And I think it's too, you know, and sometimes a lot of people did kind of run away from their home and change, you know, how their perceived gender to the outside world once they were safely away from, like, people that knew them and their family and their friends, so they could go in stealth mode. But the thing, though, too, is like,
so they're apologizing because it's associating trans people with the term wild, too.
Yeah, with also wild, because then it's like they're unusual or it's unnatural, that it's something different, that it's outside of the laws of nature, that kind of thing.
But wild is as close to nature as you can be. That's the term wild means, is that you're not part of civilization. But I would argue that from understanding the song pretty well and having interviewed Holly Woodlawn on this program and knowing very well the history and the context of that song, it was talking about the individuals who were dejected from their society and were living in a very fragile environment that was wild.
Now, what I think is also interesting is, like, we don't call black people colored people anymore either. And so that's also in that song.
But they're not criticizing that aspect of it.
But also, like, Lou Reed, I saw him perform that song later on in his career, and he was performing, and when they came up to that part, instead of saying "and the colored girl goes," he changed it to, I think, the singer's name, the African American woman's name was Jackie, and he goes, "and Jackie goes," and then she comes out and she goes, "the do 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 do," because, you know, she was not going to sing if he said "colored girl."
That's true.
You know, and so in some ways, you know, it's a wonderful song. It really has a great feel to it. It's got a good beat, and so I just kind of wish that maybe he'd changed it a little bit before he had passed on, you know, maybe got rid of the colored girls thing and maybe just and then he became a they or they became a she, or you know what I mean?
I don't know. It's important to acknowledge the song at the time.
Yeah.
And at that time period, this is the language we were using. And so we move forward, you know, and part of it is like, I think it's okay to, if you want to play it at your event, go ahead and play it. But understand, you know, maybe saying, and I think the point of the playing that song was to reference the 70s.
Yes, it was also it was meant to be.
Yeah, it was about traveling in the 70s. It was a period piece. So to me, that students were upset about something from the past, to me, seems like they weren't really getting it either. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's time to have a conversation about it as opposed to issuing a, okay, we're sorry, shut up, let us continue, whatever, you know.
Well, I guess maybe somebody was offended, so they figured, you know, the easiest thing. You know what? And if somebody's offended, is it that hard to apologize? And if you're not willing to apologize to somebody because they were offended, then, like, I don't know.
I think when the, for me, when people are offended by things, it's fun, important to have a conversation about mm-hmm. it. And so we all can grow and learn mm-hmm. about it. And it's important to acknowledge that person's distress.
Sure.
Because that distress is real. And to trust that they have the best intentions for you. Mm-hmm. And to assure them that you're going to be open-minded to listen to mm-hmm. what they have to say. Yeah. Otherwise, it's like, what are we, you know, Klingons?
You know, I'm a big fan of botched home surgeries. And I think I started
home surgeries.
Yeah, I think I kind of got into
like people getting facelifts,
all sorts of surgeries. You know, I used to have a book called done by research on pranks. And there was this great prank where this guy, these two guys would prank people. And one of the pranks is he'd walk into the pharmacy and say that he was checking out. His friend was in the car and he thinks he might have something wrong with his heart. So he's going to cut him open and just have a look and see. And he just and this pharmacist guy's like, you can't do that if you
that's
don't have
not
a license.
A good idea.
That's not a good idea. That's not a good idea. He's like, no, it'll be okay. I'm not going to really do anything. I'm just going to go in and have a look. And so
it's like lifting the hood of the car.
Yeah, that kind of thing. Well, anyway, there was a man who was arrested in Colorado because he performed, he removed the testicles of a transgender woman in a homemade surgery. I guess it lasted about 90 minutes. He had a surgical kit, like from the military. It had a scalpel, lidocaine, dressings, and other stuff. And I guess the transgender person's wife was also there during the surgery. So he went in there, opened up the scrotum, took off the testicles, and then sewed the person back up, and then said, you know, if you have any problems or whatever, like, call 911. And so there was bleeding. So, of course, she calls 911. It's just like, my wife's bleeding from this operation. So they like, well, what the heck happened? They're like, well, she had her testicles removed. And so they're like, who did this? And so they arrested the guy because they're like, you can't just perform a surgery like that.
Can you?
No, you can't do that.
You can't do...
No, you can't remove somebody's
testicles. We cut your hair at home. It's...
Yeah, but that's different. And also, too, you get a license for that kind of thing.
Are you sure you can't do that?
Mm-hmm. And so they were also talking about, like, maybe reattaching the testicles, but they said that there was a time delay there, so they didn't
But she didn't want the testicles.
I would think she wouldn't want the testicles anyway.
That's why she was getting them done at home. But I'm also... to save some money.
Yeah, but I'm also thinking, too, like, if you have, you know... you know, if you're going to have an at-home surgery, it's like, how does that, what is that conversation even like?
You'd be like, honey, listen, we can't afford to get rid of your nuts. I got some booze here. I got some ice. Do you want to try going this way?
Yeah.
And she's like, I don't think it's a good idea. Like, was one person convincing the other? Maybe it was his wife convincing him mm-hmm. to be like, no, honey, come on. Listen,
there might be some mental health issues there, right?
Maybe one person was just, you know, be like, I can do this. I got this.
I can do this. I can do this.
So sometimes you're trying to, like, trim my eyebrows, mm-hmm. and I'm like, he's going to poke out my eye
I'm
with that scissors.
I'm never going to poke out your eyes.
No, but I'm like, you know, because sometimes you have accidents. And I was just like, I get a little nervous when you're plucking at ears, hair on my ears or extra hair on my eyebrows. I'm like... Oh, man, this is the end.
This is the end. This is where I lose my beautiful blue eye.
So I guess the UK now has these amazing turbines that generate power for the country. A single revolution of the turbine's blades can power a home for up to 29 hours.
One revolution.
Yes, sir.
It produces that much energy.
These are motherfucking big turbines. And guess what the name of the company is?
What is it?
Dong Power.
All right. There's some days I'm powered by Dong, and sometimes there's days that Dong takes all my energy.
I just brought that up so I could say Dong Power on the show.
Oh, hell yeah. Dong Power is the best kind of power.
We want to remind.
Is there any kind of discharge what? To it? And any kind of discharge? That
yeah, there's
to
electrical
it?
Discharge.
Oh,
It's power in the nation. You know, just like regular old fashioned dongs. Hey guys, we want to remind you that Feast of Fun is made possible because of your financial support. We can't do this podcast without your help. Please go to feastoffun.com/donate and contribute a one-time donation or consider becoming a member and access our 13 years of podcasting on our website, feastoffun.com/plus.
Pride is right around the corner, so get your Pride merchandise, get your t-shirts at our store, feastoffun.com/store. We've got a unicorn puking a rainbow. We've got
that's such a good shirt to wear for Pride, and you can get it in a tank top, too.
We also have a Feliz Pride. It also has, like, Dia de los Muertes skulls.
Muertos.
All, like, in rainbow colors.
It's Faustus a combination.
Faustus' mother's from Mexico, so he's allowed to do that. It's not cultural appropriation.
It is my culture. I'm not appropriating it. I just thought it was, you know, I always loved the Dia de los Muertos in Austin, Texas. You know, regardless of your heritage and your racial identity, everybody celebrates Dia de los Muertos in Texas, and of course in Mexico too. And it's a fabulous holiday. And I was like, you know, this holiday should be combined with Pride. It's nice because there's nice gothic flowery aspect of Dia de los Muertos, and it just fits right together.
And you get to wear like a rainbow, but you also get to be a little macho, right?
It's you show a little bit of your ethnicity. Mm-hmm. You know, that's what the rainbow flag's all about. Mm-hmm. It's like it's showcasing what makes you unique. Because as Mr. Rogers said one time when he was drunk, it's like. He's like, you are perfect just the way you are, because God didn't make no shit.
Okay.
Guys, thank you so much for listening to the show. I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
Bye-bye.